Hi there. We are back for another one, and I think this is going to be a good one.
I hope. I have enough research here to...
Fucking brain hurts from researching.
I have a lot of research done, and I still feel like it's not enough.
Right.
There's so many twists and turns, and there's just a lot of stuff that I'm sure I've left out.
Yeah, and for those of you that aren't aware, we are doing an episode on JonBenet Ramsey.
JonBenet.
The beautiful little girl from Colorado.
Yep.
And as a disclaimer, I want to say that if we say, ultimately a little girl did die in this.
Yes.
And we understand that. I have three daughters, and I would give my last breath just to see them smile, okay? So if we do say something a little off color about this,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, because we want to apologize in advance.
We have to make the best of what this shit show of
extremely wretched
situation is. Yeah, there's just a lot
of bad
going
stuff.
On. Yeah,
a lot of bad stuff.
The first time I remember looking back in on this, which actually wasn't that long ago, it's before we started. I remember this was one of the things that I wanted to talk about. And it was just, I remember then just learning a lot of stuff that I didn't know, because this happened when we were growing up. We were young. She was born, you know, 1990. It's just a few years younger than us.
Right.
And it, you know, at that point in time, you don't realize what's happened or what, you know it's a big deal because you're going to the groceries begging your mom for a Reese cup and you see her
this
fucking face all over the tabloids.
Little girl in a cowboy hat everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Big old poofy blonde hair.
Yeah.
It's a really sad situation, and there's a lot of unanswered questions, and
we're going to get to that.
People still go crazy about this.
Yeah. And we do want to say welcome, because I don't know, we've jumped up like 500 Instagram followers this week.
Thank you guys.
A lot of new people. And I talked to you earlier today about a really cool story, and I'm going to tell everyone about it right now. So we had a guy write us. He might be listening. If you are, fucking keep on fighting the good fight,
man. This story literally made my day.
Yes. So this guy wrote us on Instagram. He said, thanks for making such a great show. I've downloaded everything and I've been listening. Cheers. So I automatically think, this is probably some foreign guy, because we did change our hosting service this week. So we're going to have a lot better audio brought to you, and we can see where people are downloading us from. And we have people from Canada and UK listening to us, which is really awesome.
We're stepping into the future here.
Yes.
For us.
Fucking time machines. But this guy, he said, keep on doing what you're doing. Cheers. And I said, hey, where are you from, man? And he wrote me back on Instagram, and it flashed across my screen. He said,
he's from Scotland.
He's from Edinburgh, Scotland.
Yeah, that's the city. Yep.
And he's using a smuggled LG cell phone in prison to listen to us. I'm like, oh my God. And I go and unlock my phone. And Instagram.
What up, D-Block?
Yeah. In Instagram, you can unsend messages.
I think if they haven't been seen.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I shoot on there, and it was gone. But, I said, hey, Rob and I both used to be CEOs.
Yeah.
It fucking sucks. Keep fighting the good fight. And this guy's got like tattoos on his face. He looks the part, but you know what?
Just fucking rock on.
Rock
dude.
On.
That's awesome. It's prison can't even hold it.
Yeah.
Hold you
I'm going to write him back and see if I can send him a sticker in prison. I don't even know if that's possible.
Put some money on his books.
Yeah. Yeah. But we are extremely excited about switching the hosting service, because our audio had to be compressed last week because it was a little bit longer of a show.
Yeah, we had a longer
really
episode.
Sucked
so
balls.
It completely crushed it, but it still wasn't too bad. I mean,
no.
Hopefully that kept my loud kids in the background from being as obvious.
What kids?
We have none tonight, which is
no
like
kids.
The first time, the second time maybe.
Yeah, so after we got done vigorously fisting one another, we finally got onto the podcast.
I kind of didn't want that to stop. It was enjoyable.
I know. I just ran out of paper towels. So.
There's a mess in my carpet. I'll have to clean up later, but I'll worry about
fine.
That then.
All right.
All right.
Well,
balls
deep. Let's
like we said, we're not claiming to know everything.
No.
It's impossible. The police don't even know everything.
And the thing I kept on running into is you go look into this stuff, and so much. There's just so much fake. Nonsense shit
right
you can't even I know how I feel, and I know what I think happened ultimately.
Yeah, and we'll get to that
But
as well.
Then I read so much other stuff, and I'm like, man, that's completely plausible.
Yeah.
So.
I had my own idea. You know, we've talked about this of exactly yes. what happened, and I'm trying to stay as, you know, shooting straight down the center yeah. as I possibly can, and not trying to pick sides.
Right. I've picked sides,
and it's really hard to not.
Right.
I mean, you're either going. It's one of two things. You're either going to think an intruder did it, which we'll get into the suspects for that. And then, or you think it was somebody within the house, which a family member.
I don't know.
But, but we'll get into that a little bit yes. farther. Well, starting out here, JonBenet Ramsey, she was 6 years old. She was a beauty pageant queen, and she was murdered on Christmas Day in 1996.
Possibly the 26th, possibly yeah. Christmas.
Yeah,
can't say for sure.
Yeah, her body for sure was found the day after. That's for sure on the 26th. That's when they found her body. It is still to this day an open case.
It's a cold case at this point.
It's a cold case, of course, yeah.
But I did read there's some new DNA techniques that are coming to the front line right now that could possibly go back and blow this thing open, but I don't think they're going to find anything new that they
haven't. Yeah. I have a little bit of notes about some testing that they did from last year.
Yeah.
It's not a lot. They don't put out a lot of information since it's still considered open.
Yeah.
But JonBenet was born, it was August 6th, 1990, in Atlanta, Georgia, to parents John and Patricia, or Patsy Ramsey.
Patsy Ramsey. And Patsy the dad's Ramsey. Name, his name was John Bennett.
John Bennett.
What kind of egotistical Ramsey. Fuck?
Yeah, they just slapped the first and middle name together, God. Put some French twang on it.
JonBenet.
JonBenet. Maybe that was his cross-dressing name.
I hate that so much.
Yeah, it's so odd, and I don't know. It's very, very
It has nothing to do about with what happened, but I just... You can tell from the start that she was just going to be immersed in this lifestyle.
Yeah, because her mom, going back to Patsy here, she was a beauty queen as well, a beauty pageant queen. She was named Miss West Virginia back in 1977, so...
She looked like a bag of smashed assholes after she had all these kids.
Yeah, she fell apart. She kind of came out looking like the Hamburglar.
CrossFit wasn't a thing then, obviously.
Yeah, it was... donuts will get to you. JonBenet had won, I think it was 24 different beauty pageants.
I don't even know.
A couple of the ones, we got Little Miss Colorado, Little Miss Charlevoix. That's fancy as shit right there. Colorado State All-Star Kids Cover Girl, America's Royale Miss, and National Tiny Miss Beauty. So
apparently it's an extremely lucrative business if you can, because there's, you know, there's like a pot you win if you win these stupid things.
Yeah, she was... doing pretty well, obviously.
What do you think it does to a girl?
It depends. And we don't know in this situation if it was something that JonBenet wanted to do herself, or if it was something that she was pressured into by her mom. I mean, she's six. I don't know how much fun a girl can have at a beauty pageant.
Girls like playing dress up.
Girls
and stuff
do like playing
that.
Dress up. I'm personally not into the, I mean, I'm not into the beauty pageant thing.
Well, you know,
I would lose every time, but I think the idea of making a child look like an adult and kind of hypersexualizing them is
unforgivable.
It's really bad.
So coming from a father of three daughters, if I came home and my wife had my daughters dressed up in something like that, Someone's catching a fist in the neck for sure. I'm punching somebody right in the fucking neck.
It's a crazy thing, and I mean, it's really, really big here. It's a real popular thing, and I don't get it. Then again, I have all boys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe one of those things where I just don't understand.
Right.
But it's a little creepy.
Yeah, maybe helps them build confidence, and maybe later on in life, public speaking and just kind of being a leader type thing.
I could see how it could build confidence and things like that. I understand that completely. But it's kind of a perversion type thing on it as an outsider's
yeah.
as an outsider's perspective, but what do I know? Now, John and Patsy have two children together. They have JonBenet, and they have their older son, Burke.
Butthole Burke.
Butt burglar Burke. Now, the family moves from Atlanta, which Marietta, I think is what it was. Was that something like that?
And I read they kind of bounce back and forth all the time, even after they moved.
Yeah, they have houses. They're a very wealthy family.
They had racks on racks on racks.
Yeah, yeah. They moved to Boulder, Colorado in 91. John, going back to him having money, he formed a company called Advanced Product Group, who was eventually merged into a company that was called Access Graphics. That's the big dog there.
Sounds like a whole bunch of sex with interns.
Access Graphics is a very ambiguous name, I guess.
You
would have no idea what they
none.
Do.
Prestige worldwide.
Exactly.
Wide.
They were pretty much a computer company who was a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin.
Good people there.
Lockheed Martin, if you don't know, they are one of the largest in the world for defense contractors. They are the U.S.'s war funding machine.
Dirty, dirty, dirty fucking money.
Yeah, they are. They're the war makers. That's where the money's at. That's why they, you know, were so successful. President and CEO of Access Graphics. So they definitely weren't hurting. That's
where you kind of think about there were potentially a lot of politics involved with this.
Yeah.
A lot of people with power that could make something happen.
Yeah.
Like something grotesque like this happen, and not a fucking drop of sweat would roll off their back.
No. It's just another day in the life.
Yeah.
It's a really, really crazy and sad situation. That is,
there's a lot of bullshit we could talk about right there, but
with the parents and everything. But let's
time for the meat and taters.
Yeah, this thing's gonna. There's a super long thing, so let's just get into the whole situation of what had happened.
The days leading up.
The days leading up, starting off with like we said, Christmas night is the night when supposedly everything happened, but going a couple days beforehand. And this kind of paints the picture a little bit of how out of control things got. December 23rd, and this is 1996, the Ramseys hosted a Christmas party at their house.
Tons of people.
Yeah, yeah. Those people, a lot of people there. They had a journalist, which this is going to come in later, named Bill McReynolds, who was Santa Claus. So they have not just a normal guy that plays Santa Claus. You have a journalist, a well-respected journalist, playing Santa Claus.
It's like getting fucking Dick Cheney to come to your house dressed as the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, exactly.
Come here, son of my wife. Don't touch my fucking shit bag.
Yeah, this goes into the whole, you know, they're a powerful white family.
And, you can't say white power in the same sentence, Rob.
I guess that's true.
Let's keep it moving.
So they have the party. The next day, couple days, you know, there's not much. I believe they go to one of their friends' parties.
I would like to say there was a 911 hang-up call.
Yeah, that's right.
At the house 3 days prior that the police responded to without incident.
Yeah.
There was nothing.
He said, oops,
they didn't hear anything.
Our bad.
But that honestly could have been a precursor of the abuse that maybe JonBenet was receiving.
Yeah, exactly. And actually going back, the Christmas party that they attended after, it was actually Christmas night, the 25th. One of their friends' Christmas party. It was Fleet and Priscilla White.
God, what a beautiful name.
Fleet.
If my name was Fleet and I was about to just tag a chick, I would just be like, I'm about to fleet the shit out of you.
Call me Fleet.
Yeah.
Say my name. The Ramseys get home around 8 p.m. that night. That's all of them. You know, they get home. JonBenet supposedly was sent to bed around 9:30 that night. And they sent Burke to bed around 10. A little bit later. He was a little bit older.
Because he stays up later and plays with John.
Exactly. Yeah, so they have their little thing going on.
Yeah.
And he goes to bed around 10. This is all of the events that night. There's not a lot of details, you know.
No, and it's all hearsay because
yeah.
The instant this thing kind of went down, the Ramseys lawyered up, and there's not a lot of details.
Which we'll get into that. The whole situation with the police and everything gets real crazy. Now, around 2 a.m., so it would be the 26th, their neighbor, Melody Stanton, claims that she heard a scream from the Ramseys' house. Now, this is, of course, she didn't act upon it at 2 a.m., because why would you?
Yeah, and if you do go back and look, I don't know, you might want to talk about this later. There was somewhere north of 100 burglaries in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I got that on here. There's a lot of burglaries.
During that time, like around that time. But you have to take into effect that it was Christmas time.
Yeah.
And it's a well-to-do neighborhood, not far from a major metropolitan area. So
right.
If you're the Sticky Bandits, where are you going? You're not going to rob the projects. You're not going to the Jeffersons.
You're picking off Kevin McAllister's house.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was at 2 a.m. At around 5:30 is when the Ramseys wake up, because they have a family vacation that they're getting ready to go to in Michigan.
Naturally.
Who the fuck vacations in Michigan, first off?
Assholes that kill their daughter.
That want to go to shitty cold beaches?
Yeah.
Now that was 5:30. Around 5:45, this is when Patsy goes downstairs. John is in the bathroom washing his balls, whatever he does at this time. He's counting his money.
I wonder what he named his balls. He named his daughter JonBenet. John Barrett, like a fucking big old rifle.
50 cal. She goes downstairs where she discovers the ransom note on the staircase. And she screams,
"Oh no, I don't know who wrote this.
Who could have wrote this?" Oh my God, a note.
Yeah, we're giving ourselves away.
She yells, "Mr. Ramsey puts his balls away and comes downstairs."
That's in the police report.
That's in the police report. He reads the note, and Patsy proceeds to call 911 after that. I do have the 911 call. Let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
911 emergency.
Oh, we need police.
What's going on?
515th Street.
What's going on there, ma'am?
We have a kidnapping. Hurry, please.
Explain to me what's going on, okay?
There, we have a... There's a note left and our daughter's gone.
A note was left and your daughter is gone?
Yeah.
How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's gone. 6 years old.
How long ago was it?
I don't know. I just found the note. And my daughter's gone.
Does it say who took her?
What?
Does it say who took her?
What?
I don't know. There's a ransom note here.
It's a ransom note?
It says FBTC. Victory. Please.
Okay, what's your name? Are you
Patsy Ramsey? I'm the mother. Oh my God. Please.
Okay, I'm sending an officer over, okay?
Please.
Do you know how long she's been gone?
No, I don't. Please, we just got out and she ran here. Oh my God, please.
Okay.
Please, well, somebody.
I am, honey.
Please.
Take a deep breath.
Please,
me, okay?
Hurry.
Patsy?
Answer the woman.
Yeah.
She wouldn't even respond.
No.
And that shows what kind of people these are.
Yeah. Filthy fucking crackheads.
Well,
I have some information about the 911 phone call. I guess there's some audio scientists. I don't know what the fuck that is, but
they
broke this down in the investigation. At one point, they have the phone kind of far away, and you can hear Patsy saying, "Help me, Jesus, help me, Jesus."
Yeah.
But then you hear an older male say, "We're not speaking to you."
Really?
And then you hear a young male, a little boy, say, "Well, did you find her?" So some people kind of chalk that up to this. We'll get into this theory later, that the male lashing out at the young one saying, "We're not talking to you," like he possibly did something bad he wasn't supposed to.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's crazy.
And that was actually presented to the grand jury.
Okay.
And we'll get into that later.
Yeah,
as well.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. See, that's what's awesome is you learn new things.
Yes.
And
yes,
yes. Now after Patsy gets off the phone with 911, she calls her friends, a couple different friends, afterwards to tell.
Girl, you ain't gonna believe what the fuck just happened up in this motherfucker.
She hits up Fleet, the Whites, and tells them what's happened.
Fleet White is the most racist name.
Fleet and Priscilla.
Yeah.
So she calls them, and she calls another couple friend, John and Barbara Fernie. These white people names.
I got a Fernie story for you.
It is disgusting. Yeah. These fucking rich white people.
Just burn down the neighborhood.
This is coming from a poor white person, so
I'm
it's
going
all right.
Tomorrow.
So she calls them and lets them know what's going on. So she makes a 911 call right around 5:52. 5:59, so that's, you know, 7 minutes later, it's good turnover. Officer Carl Veach, I believe, he arrives at the house, and he's the first officer on the scene. He goes and is greeted by Patsy, and then John shows him through the house, shows him where the ransom note was, afterwards. So they do a real quick one over of the house, and they see where the ransom note is. Just after 6, Officer French searches the basement. Now, JonBenet is... She's in the wine cellar.
Okay, so there's the basement.
Yeah, and this layout's crazy. There's the basement, and there's... It's essentially a room within a room.
Yeah, there's a utility room.
Yeah.
And there's a door in the utility room which leads to the wine cellar.
Which leads to the wine cellar, exactly. They go downstairs. He gets through the main room. And at this point, he's looking for exit locations. He's looking for places where someone would have, an intruder would have tried to escape after the situation. So he goes in. He sees the wine cellar door. He doesn't know what the door is, obviously. But he does not go into that door because there was a lock, like a latch, on the inside of the door that was still latched. So somebody would not have been able to leave that location and lock it from the inside. So he doesn't look in that door.
Officer of the year right there.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'm not going to go above and beyond. Fuck that.
He's like, I'm working Christmas. This is fucking bullshit.
And 6:03, the Whites arrive.
Along with the parade of people, was it just them or was there?
It was them at first, then the Fernies show up.
Yes.
So they arrive, the cops are there. Within 15 minutes of them being there, Mr. White is Walter White. Mr. White Fleet is searching the basement. He searches the playroom, which is Burke's train room. And he sees there that there's a broken window, and it has a suitcase under it.
Yes.
As if it's like a stepping, pretty much like something to step on to get out of the window.
But they also did say that there was cobwebs,
spider webs on the outside that were undisturbed.
Undisturbed.
Yeah, so it makes it seem like, you know, that's obviously not, that wasn't an exit.
And everyone says, oh my God, it's a broken window. Well, John said, I broke that window last year. Yeah.
I've never fixed it. I lock myself out of the house quite often.
My Christmas bonus was 6 figures, but I'm not too worried about that.
I'm not replacing a $50 window. That's what we have other people to do this kind of shit for.
Pay the Mexicans to do that
shit. Exactly. So they go through, of course, they search the wine cellar. Mr. White there, he searches the wine cellar and doesn't see anything. He says that it was too dark in that room for him to see, and he couldn't find a light switch. So there's another... First off, obviously, this is going to show some negligence of the Boulder police here, because they should have had that locked down.
Yeah, at this point, the crime scene is fucked beyond immeasurable repair.
Yeah. Okay,
so a crime scene is like a beautiful, precious, virgin prison asshole, okay? If you monitor that thing and keep a good eye on it, keep it locked down, it's going to be okay.
It's going to be nice and tight.
But then the second you let it go and you walk away, that shit's going to get fucking blown apart like the Death Star.
There's going to be shit just falling out.
It's going to get worn out. It's going
to have to push.
Be like an old tattered
boot.
Stan usual catcher's mitt. It's
exactly. They went through and they treated it as if it was an abduction as opposed to a crime scene.
But even still.
And the thing is that from what I remember reading is that a lot of the officers that were on the scene were the rookies.
Yes.
Because they pulled the short end of the straw because it's a holiday.
Yes.
Your veteran officers are going to be taking that shit off.
Christmas Day of all holidays.
Yeah.
No one works on Christmas.
Yeah, so you're getting these guys who... I just cracked a beer open, sorry. Who aren't having, a ton of experience. And going back on experience, this is December 25th. This is the first murder in Boulder that year. So, that year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is... something that these people probably aren't familiar with dealing with. So, going back to this, you have people that aren't officers that are searching.
At one point, you have a victims advocate group that catch wind of this. They come in.
They
bring bagels and coffee and donuts.
In the house.
When they're done, they scrub the bitch down and clean up after themselves.
Yeah, so wiping away all possible evidence that may have been left. It's just a shit show. It's it's exactly like the same type of situation with the OJ trial.
Yeah,
with the cops had no fucking idea what they were doing there.
This is kind of the infancy stage of DNA testing.
Yeah,
where
the OJ Simpson case was the first major trial to use it.
So,
and this is like the second, pretty much.
So that's not. I'm sure that training isn't at the forefront at that point. For the officers to say, hey, we got to just no one touch anything. No one. I mean, at that point, a thorough, evidence technician would just dust for fingerprints.
Yeah.
Pretty old practice.
Yeah, exactly. You're stepping into, there's like the generation gap there. It's like the people that are still using AOL, we're running super
You've
high
got
speed.
Mail.
Yeah. Well, After Fleet goes through and, is unable to find the light switch, John and Barbara Fernie arrive. This is around 6:10, 6:20. They arrive separately. John arrives first, and then Barbara Fernie arrives. And this is where Detective Arndt. She tells John at this time, because he's kind of just hanging out, and she's wanting to busy him. So she tells him to go ahead and just search. Just go ahead and look through the house.
Well,
I'm a detective, but you can go ahead and you can search the house a little
before
bit.
Before that, the officers and the detectives noted that he was very nonchalant about everything. He was kind of like just looking off into space. If something like that happened to me, I would be hysterical. I would be out on the streets.
And what he tries to do after this blows my mind. We'll get into that where I'm going.
And they
that.
Also said Patsy just sat in a chair the whole time, and they did not interact with one another at all.
Yeah, they were pretty separate there. Detective Arndt tells Mr. Ramsey to go ahead and search. So he takes Fleet down to the basement.
Just please do my fucking job for me.
The thing is that from all that I've seen, whenever she tells them that. Every time they go to search, these assholes are going to the basement every time.
And they also said that there was a point that he went downstairs by himself for an extended period of time. He just kind of disappeared and rolled off downstairs. Doing what?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Covering up his fucking tracks.
That's what it could be, maybe. Exactly. So, him and Fleet go downstairs to the basement. Mr. Ramsey, of course, knows where the light switch is when he gets through the first room and then when he goes to the wine cellar, he knows where it is. And he flips the light on, and of course, they find her on the floor, wrapped in her white blanket. She had duct tape across her mouth, her wrists and ankles were bound, and here's another big fuck up. He takes the duct tape off of her mouth and carries her upstairs.
At that point, speaking as a father, I don't see that he did anything wrong.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And as a parent, I would have done the same exact thing. I would have tried to do whatever I could have.
Yeah.
But as an investigation standpoint, there could have been, you know, trace materials, fingerprints, anything on that duct tape.
So much. Yeah.
He completely compromised
the
body and everything when he did that.
Maybe that's what he was trying to do.
And very, very well. I mean, it could be. And he carries her upstairs. He puts her down, and then supposedly, from if I remember right, Fleet picks her up and moves her again and puts her under the Christmas tree.
I read that the detective Linda.
Okay.
She's the one that moved, but Fleet was screaming for someone to call 911.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Mr. Ramsey John, he puts the tape on the couch, and of course when Patsy sees JonBenet, she throws herself across her body and freaks out, of course.
Yeah.
Which once again I totally understand.
Yeah.
Now with her body, there was also we already mentioned that she was bound, she was duct taped. There was also a garrote that was found.
Yeah.
Let's get into that a little bit. If you don't know what a garrote is, you pretty much have a piece of cord, string, something that you would use to choke someone with. Both ends would have something firm or solid tied to them, like a rod or something,
right?
Something to get leverage, and you just loop it around the neck and you could twist it and it'll keep applying pressure and it'll get tighter and tighter. This was a nylon cord and a paintbrush, one of Patsy's paintbrushes that was broken in half, that was tied at both ends. So that's gruesome, first off.
Yeah.
But
the paintbrush that was used was a paintbrush from inside the house.
Yes, it was everything, all the evidence. Well, what we have, I guess I should say, anything that's included or anything that was used for the murder is all materials that were found inside of the house. So whoever did this, if it was an intruder or if it was a family, from what they had figured out, nothing was brought from outside in. It was all stuff that was used from inside the house.
To go back to when they put her on the ground, at one point, John, leans over the body, and Linda Arndt, the detective, leans over the body at the same time, and she does an interview. And some people have almost a sixth sense, they just good judges of character, I should say.
Right.
I think I'm a good judge of character.
Yeah, definitely.
She did this interview. She said that the moment.
And she wasn't a rookie detective.
No.
She was a big dog.
The moment that they both leaned over the body, there was a nonverbal visual exchange between her and John. And she said at that moment, everything that had happened up to that point completely clicked for her. And that she realized that she was in the room with the murderers. Okay. She reached down and grabbed her gun and pulled it closer to her body. And stopped for a second to think about how many bullets she had in that exact instant. She said,
"That's chilling.
I counted the bullets in my brain that exact second because I knew I was in the room with the murder of this child." That everything clicked for her.
And that's...
That speaks volumes
that's
coming
instinct,
from...
You know what I mean? And
yes.
A lot of times in situations like this... And let's get into the facts. You have a dead child. I believe it's something crazy like 9 out of 10 times that a child dies or is murdered at the hands of the parents or the family.
Someone close to them, correct.
Yeah, there usually is a track record of abuse, which there wasn't here, that we know of. That was, nothing was ever reported. But, that in itself, you know, you're automatically going to think that somebody within the house is going to be your main suspect.
Exactly. And it, for her, it was open and shut.
Right. And
that's pretty chilling stuff. That she said there was a non-verbal visual exchange between her and John that was the most uncomfortable feeling she's ever had in all of her years of law enforcement.
She just felt it. She just sensed it. It was just something that, like a chill down your spine.
Like that, yeah.
It's crazy. I'm going to go a little bit forward here. If you want to cut in here and say something beforehand, let me know. I want to get to the autopsy. Since we're talking about her body here, I kind of want to go into a little bit of what the coroner and everything found out from the autopsy. The autopsy proved that the garrote was used, but that's originally what they thought, is that it was strangulation that killed her.
Right.
But what the autopsy shown was that there was blunt force trauma to her head.
And when we say blunt force trauma,
her skull was fractured.
It was fractured. But
she was cracked.
The district attorney said the fracture she suffered, a 350-pound lineman couldn't inflict on a grown man. So this had to have been a baseball bat, which there was a baseball bat outside, or a torch of something, like a mag light, a flashlight, and there was a mag light on the scene that belonged to the family.
So you have the blunt force trauma, which completely incapacitated her. It fractured her skull, and so that completely took her out. But then it was ruled that, you know, what killed her was the asphyxiation due to strangulation.
Yeah.
And
also it was noted that she had been unconscious
for an hour,
for 45 minutes to 2 hours.
Yeah. Before she was actually killed.
After she took the blow to the skull, 45 minutes to 2 hours later, someone said, this girl is not dead. Now we have to take her life.
Yeah. And who knows within that 45 minutes to 2 hours, what had happened? We'll get into a little bit more of what the autopsy pulled out, which may go into some of that.
Did you also know they found two prong marks under her chin?
Yes. I didn't know it was under her chin, but I know. I thought it was on her sides, but I may be wrong. There was like two holes.
Yeah, like a stun gun.
Yeah. Here's the thing. There's a huge stun gun theory about this, and I don't know. Did you have to get tased for your?
Yeah.
You did. I didn't. And here's what I know. I've seen people get tased when I worked at the jail. You have the taser, or you have a drive stun, which is essentially they take the cartridge off, and it's essentially just a stun gun. You can either get shot with the prongs, or you can just take the shot.
Take it straight to the fucking
neck. Take it right to the ass. Yeah. Now, the marks that were on her were perfectly spaced apart, and they were holes. They looked like holes, like essentially like a vampire bite marks is what they resembled. Now, there was a lot of studies done about this, which a lot of places, more so than not, are ruling it as a taser. But here's the thing. A stun gun does not incapacitate you.
It does for a few minutes. For a few moments.
It's a 5 second ride. Now, but the thing is that it doesn't knock you out.
No.
You're locked up, depending on the person.
That shit would be illegal if that's what it did.
Yeah. You're locked up. You can't do anything. Some people can, because some people are fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But if it's just a stun gun, you're hitting them, and your first instinct, if it's not the prongs, your first instinct is to move away.
Yeah.
Your heart rate moves up. Your heart rate goes higher, so your heart's going faster. You're trying to get away from it.
Yeah, it doesn't knock your ass out.
Yeah, and these marks are completely inconsistent with any taser that they tried.
I also heard they matched up with train tracks from Burke.
That's what I was getting to.
Fucking asshole, Burke.
You have a train room the next room over, and anybody that was a kid, which I would assume a lot of you were kids at one point in time.
Maybe. I know some of them are like, some of our listeners are like fucking android bots that
don't age,
wired in a lab.
You fucking assholes.
We love you the most.
I'm like aging as we speak. But you have the old school train tracks, which, you know, you you would have to take, there are the black train tracks with the silver metal in the middle of them that your train would have to stay in contact with, and you'd snap those together. Those prong marks that, because at the end of the track, you'd have the two prongs that stuck out.
Yeah.
Those were the only thing that they found that were consistent with the puncture wounds that were on her skin.
I did not have a sister growing up. I had a younger brother and an older brother, and if one of those motherfuckers were getting up in my shit, you best believe that I'm jamming some train tracks up underneath their chin.
And that's a good weapon, because those things were sharp. They could easily hurt.
And this also adds fuel to the fire that Burke is possibly suspect numero uno.
Yes, exactly. And that's obviously, we'll get into that.
Yeah. Maybe.
But, so the timeline of the attack shows that she was, like I said, she was strangled, and then, or shows that she was hit, and then, within that amount of time or whatever, she was killed. There was, on the autopsy, they did find no, evidence of conventional rape. So, penis and vag, there was no physical intercourse that they could find.
From the moment of the murder.
Yeah.
But they did say that there was possibly sexual assault.
There was, yeah.
That was happening over a period of time leading up to this.
Right. She did have, some multiple vaginal injuries. They did not find any semen, but they did find that her vagina had been wiped clean,
like scrubbed.
Yeah, so pretty much somebody trying to get rid of any type of
which adds fuel to another fire,
which I want to get into. Yes. That's one of my closing. That's one of my closing cases. There is the how I feel what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of trauma from, in her personal area,
in her
downstairs.
We call it a vajayjay at my house.
Yeah. I feel so weird talking about a six-year-old's vagina.
Or vagina.
This is the weirdest conversation ever. Like, I hate saying I feel creepy as shit.
Yeah, I feel like I've cleaned more vaginas than a fucking delivery room nurse.
I think I've seen two, so I'm all right.
Right. My life.
Yeah, in my whole life, yeah. What they did say, though, is that the trauma to her nether regions could have been due to years of abuse from spandex.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about that kind of stuff.
See, when I put my spandex on, my balls kind of fall out to the side.
They
makes it really uncomfortable.
And it adds a little bit, though.
And if I get going down the runway too fast, you can actually see, my pubes will start to catch fire. And I gotta, slow down. All right, Nick, you need this fucking money. Don't light your pubes on fire again.
Please. We would have just mistake you for a little boy. Well, so you have the whole, sexual assault thing there. There was something. What they think it was is that it was either a foreign object, or it was a, I'll just put it blankly. They think it was going to be a foreign object or a finger, or fingers that did the majority of the damage that they found.
Yeah.
And
they did find DNA in her panties.
Underwear, yeah.
But, so the thing with that is the strands of DNA that were found were so small that they could be chalked up to the manufacturing process, the people, the plant that make the underwear.
Yep.
That the DNA was so small, such a small amount that it could be chalked up to that. Which, a lot of people kind of hang their hat on the fact that, they found DNA in her underwear. It was someone, it was someone that came in and did it. Well, no, this could have been...
They were able to determine that it was male DNA that wasn't associated with the family.
Yeah, and I read the DNA after all the testing that it came to six different people.
Yeah, in 2016, from what I saw, whenever they did the forensic analysis again, they found for sure markers from two separate individuals. I think they found 10 different markers from two different individuals besides JonBenet. And this is 2016. This is last year. This is pretty up to date. This is October as well. So it's pretty up to date information. Besides the whole sexual assault stuff, there was, and this is a big, piece of evidence for some of the theories, which I agree with as well, not to give spoilers, yeah. But also found was pineapples in her stomach.
Yeah.
Which those, the state of the pineapples and for the digestion, they were able to determine that she had consumed them within a few hours of
before,
her death.
Yeah. And the parents didn't give her pineapples before bed.
Yeah. The Patsy claims she did not give any of the kids pineapples. Now, a bowl of pineapples was found in the kitchen, and they did print that bowl, and they were able to find prints on that belonging to Burke and Patsy.
And they said the combination of the spoon and the bowl was kind of something like an adult wouldn't pick. Okay. So like right. a big spoon and a bowl that the family didn't normally use.
Yeah. And I mean, granted, you know, this is their house. A lot of the DNA and a lot of the stuff is going to be,
yeah,
it's going to be there because it's their house. But if Patty has no recollection of giving them, you know, the pineapple, then it's one of two things. Either one, she is a fucking horrible dishwasher, or should I say their white maid is a horrible dishwasher. Or
someone had
she gave it to them, or Burke snuck down and got it himself and she had it as well.
Yeah.
It's in her stomach. There's no way around it. You know, she ate that sometime that night. And it's the fact that his prints are on that bowl. And Patsy claims she has no idea, you know, how they got it, because she says that she would have heard them if they would have snuck out. But
not true.
The layout of their bedrooms, well, JonBenet's in particular, this is a 4-story house. They are, I think JonBenet was a floor down and about 70 feet over.
Yeah.
So
that would make me a nervous fucking wreck as
a parent. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, that's the majority of the information that I have on the autopsy. I want to go in a little bit further into the note. We kind of grazed over the note a little bit. Just, you know, that they found it and where they found it
This is going to be a cornerstone of this project.
This is by far the most puzzling and most...
For me, it's the most damning piece of evidence for the entire thing.
Yeah, and it just raises a lot of questions that, you know, really haven't been answered. So let's go ahead and get into the letter.
This is the ransom note found on the stairs by Patsy Ramsey.
Yes. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see you 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be well rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise that you do not provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as the police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny, as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John. Victory. S-B-T-C.
Victory.
Victory.
Victory in the Lord.
All right, well, this note causes a lot of...
red flags.
A lot of red flags. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
Number one for me.
Yeah.
$118,000.
This is the conspiracy theorist's dream, I should say. And it points a lot to, you know, the family, of what makes it, this fuels the fire for them believing it's going to be the family. $118,000 is a very random amount of money.
Maybe not.
It is a small amount of money for a family who is easily millionaires.
Yes.
$118,000 comes into call because
it's the exact amount for John Ramsey's Christmas bonus.
Exactly. So,
and now whenever you receive a bonus from your work, it's right. not for an entire year's salary. It's for weeks,
whatever percentage,
maybe months
of your year's
of work.
Income.
So for someone to say this guy makes $15 million a year, we only want $118,000.
Right.
No.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
Which says it's either a power move from someone that knows, like we said, he was part of a very powerful defense contracting realm, we should say. There's a lot of different shit involved there, but
yes,
nonetheless, people that were over the top powerful that would do cutthroat things like this.
Yes. Besides the $118,000, that's a huge thing. It's so coincidental.
Yes.
So this would point to either, obviously, someone in the house knowing that John got at least that much that he could give, that he could do with or without. Because that's a bonus, essentially.
The drop of a hat, yeah.
Exactly. Or it's somebody that is familiar with this company, knows how much he made, and is like, okay, I can easily get that out.
Right.
Me, personally, I'm not killing and abducting a kid for $100,000.
No, 118 I might. Is it one of your kids?
And this is, well... Go to a good home. if it's a foreign faction, especially,
yeah,
you know, 118,000 is
right,
kind of a shit show of a number. Yep.
ISIS can't even fund their people with porn for $118,000.
Yeah, they really can't.
Right.
Now there's a lot of phrasing. And a lot of strange terminology used in this letter.
I read that there was six different spots where maternalistic, motherly terms were used, like make sure you're well rested,
right,
for instance, which kind of leads you to believe that they try and make you believe that it was written by a woman. And there's also the handwriting analysis. They broke it down. They said there was a high probability that this was written by a woman, but someone used a broad-tipped Sharpie. Marker to write the letter, which is handwriting.
There was bleed, and
yeah, this is an analyst's worst nightmare when it comes to doing these type of things, trying to analyze and compare. But the marker used was from inside the house, and the marker was put back where it was taken from. Also, the notepad was from inside the house.
Yes.
there was indentations on the paper from where they wrote a practice note and then ripped the practice note out. The practice note was never recovered.
Yes.
But there was indentations from where they wrote the practice note. On the letter itself, there were no fingerprints recovered.
None at all.
Just the crime lab guy.
Yes. But that's the only fingerprints they found exactly.
On the notepad that it was taken from, the fingerprints of one Patsy Ramsey.
Yes. And going into the notepad a little bit further, you have, like how you were saying, there was a rough draft and everything. There was the notepad itself. The first 12 pages of that notepad were missing. Pages 13 through 16 had different types of, you know, lists, drawings, like doodles, shit like that on it. Someone just fucking passing the time because they have a maid that cleans up after them.
Yep.
So that's 13 through 16. Pages 17 through 25 are gone as well. 26 is the rough draft. And another kind of red flag for me is that the rough draft, they can tell starts Mr. and Mrs. And then there's a bar, like the back bar of an R. So obviously Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, but the note itself is only addressed Mr. Ramsey.
Okay. Didn't know that.
Yeah. So whoever writes this note decides to scrap Mrs. Ramsey. Which is fishy. Pages 27 through 29 are the actual note. So that puts this note, I believe, was it 2.5 or 3 pages long?
2.5 pages, yep.
Yeah, it was I think it's still the longest ransom note in U.S. Right. history.
And the experts said a note like this would take approximately, with a swift hand, 21 minutes to pen.
Yes.
That's not taking into consideration the maybe 20 minutes they spent on the practice note. So you have 20 minutes for the practice note, okay? 20 minutes to write the real note. So you're close to an hour right there. There was an hour or 2 hour gap between when she was knocked in the head and when she was strangled. So you're talking 3 to 4 hours of this person being inside the home at this point. So they went to bed at, 11 o'clock at night. They woke up at 5:30 in the morning. That's 6 hours.
Yeah.
3 to 4 hours of those 6 hours, this person or people were inside this house committing a murder and no one...
writing a note.
And no one woke up.
And, yeah, it's... it's so fishy.
Biggest crock fucking shit I've ever heard in my entire life.
And I want to get into a couple of the phrasings in this note. Now, right off at the very beginning, they say, we respect your business, but not the country that it serves. To me, that sounds like, JonBenet was kidnapped and murdered because someone hated the U.S.
Yeah, no. not true.
Just random.
I definitely would have fucking killed Madonna before I killed JonBenet Ramsey in 1996. Okay, and there's also a lot of people point to the fact that there's a lot of... there's so much nonsense rambling in this letter.
Yes.
There's so much irrelevant stuff.
That could be cut out because... Your average ransom note is...
Two to three lines,
like, yeah.
And this is a... I know we've all experienced this. This is an attempt to oversell something.
Yes.
So it's like when your mom comes downstairs and she's like, why is your fucking note, your brother's nose fucking bleeding? You're like, well, funny story, Mom. I was walking down the stairs and I put my hand on the railing because you've always taught me it's good to be safe, Mom. And I got to the bottom of the stairs and I said, you know what? I think I want to wear my Batman shoes today. And then I walked down the hallway and that's when my brother fell and he hit his nose. And I want to tell you about all this stuff leading up to this point because I didn't really punch my brother in the fucking face. It's an attempt to oversell.
Exactly. You're trying your own way to cover your ass.
Yeah, when your boss is like, why'd you call in sick? I'm like, well, I woke up and noticed that the color of my alarm clock was gray. And from there, People do it in lying situations.
Yes, exactly. That's one of the things That's one of the things they'll do. Another thing that you have in this letter that you have examples of is you have a lot of changing of plural pronouns. Of pronouns essentially. The first paragraph you have, it is all plural pronouns. So, you know, like we, they're going for the group mentality.
Yep.
Now, once you get later, they're using singular pronouns. So they'll say, I will call you.
Right.
Instead of saying, you know, we will call you, or we advise you to be, you know, we advise you to be well rested. You can easily see by that, you know, the discrepancies within that it seems as if they started out with the whole, you know, we are a foreign faction.
Right.
And it slowly goes back to, you know, a singular. Yeah.
Gotta distance myself from this bitch.
Yeah. And then let's talk about the phrase "and hence." What type of pretentious douchebags use that terminology? Well, the Ramses do.
Yes. Hence my wine cellar, which... tell them about it, Fleet.
Yeah, exactly.
Fleet, will you tell them about the wine cellar?
And hence is a very, you know, old-fashioned term. I honestly have never said "and hence" in my lifetime.
We're too stupid.
Yeah, we're... I can barely string together a sentence, let alone...
I can't spell fucking podcast.
So. You gotta spell check it every time we put one up. Is the D before the C?
Yeah, please help me, Windows 95.
The "and hence" is, you know, something that obviously shows up in this letter, and it is a phrase that the Ramses use, or had been shown to use,
rather freely.
Yeah, it appeared on the Christmas cards. John had used it in speeches after the fact.
Yeah.
Now, this very well could be chalked up to the fact that they read this note so many times that it kind of sat in the back of their mind.
Sure.
But I don't know many people that would use that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a red flag.
It's an outdated like word or phrase.
Yeah.
And
when they were doing the handwriting comparisons after the note, okay, so that John Ramsey was ruled out
right away.
As far as the note goes.
Yes.
But Patsy Ramsey, when she was doing when the investigators were having her write down samples, they said that the analyst could sense a lot of deception as far as her trying to change her handwriting.
Specifically with her A's.
Right. But the stuff they went back and got, like from her yearbook and from old cards and whatnot, they matched up. They said there was over 200 similarities they found between old notes and the ransom note. And also, when they were making her write samples, they said, okay, write the number $118,000. She fucking long-handed like a check. She wrote 118.
Who does that?
And no matter what they did, they're like, no, let's hear you fucking filthy cuntbag. Write the number, write it, and a numerical value, write down $118,000. And still, she would longhand it. She would not physically write a number. She would only spell the word. And she refused to write.
Yeah. A lot of the handwriting analysis experts that they had checked this, pretty much all of them came to the same conclusion that if anybody wrote it, it was Patsy.
It was her.
Yes, exactly. The last thing, because we're already at a pretty long episode here, so we'll finish up about the note, and then we'll continue with the second episode. The last thing here that, of course, a lot of people make a big deal about is that the note is signed Victory SBTC. There are a lot of different, you know, meanings of what it could mean. Like, you know, as an acronym, it could stand for anything. And honestly, looking into them, I don't really find any real significance. There was the saved by the cross is what it could. That's one of the things. But
it was also the same initials for a country club that
Boating Club or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't put too much thought into it because obviously it's nothing that's ever been proven or nothing that's ever been figured out, I should say. Right. So, I mean, obviously the person that wrote it,
it had to mean something because somebody wrote it, or they're just trying to throw the dog off the trail.
Yeah, throw a gear in the crank there. I don't know what it is, and it's hard to say.
I think it's irrelevant.
I think so too.
I think it was an attempt to throw off.
It's a dodge.
Yeah.
Well,
that's it for this one.
That's for all we can fit into this
first
one.
Half.
It's a total cliffhanger.
Yeah.
For the next episode, we'll go
some very shifty moves by the parents of JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah, a lot of that. We'll get into a lot of the
who did it
difficulties between the police and the families, and then we'll get into who did it. Which if you can't figure out what we think by now, then
yeah,
it's like I said, it's crazy, it's long, there's a lot of stuff. I still feel like I'm learning stuff about it as we go. It's a horrible situation.
Yeah,
it is the perfect story for tabloid magazines.
Oh yeah. Just last week I was at the grocery store.
I saw one
on the cover
yesterday.
Yeah.
Yep. It's still going strong.
Get the fuck over it.
Yeah. That was 1996, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I have. We will pick back up with the second episode of JonBenet Ramsey.
Thank you, Brohio Nation, for coming to this episode.
Thank you very much, bros. We love you and appreciate you, as always.
And come back for shout-outs in the next one.
Next one we'll have shout-outs since this is going to be a two-parter. And like I said, as always, please share, review us on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Screenshot that, send it over to us, let us see it.
Free sticker.
Free sticker. Yeah, we got shirts coming in, hopefully this coming up week as well.
Yep.
Today is the June 19th is what it is. So hopefully by the end of this week, we'll have shirts in. We'll have those posted either, Instagram, Facebook, find us there. We'll post some stuff there whenever we get them in. And, as always, I hope you guys have a great week. And until we meet again.
Let's hop on our time machine.
Yes. Let's, we'll see you at the next episode, actually. Thanks, bro.